podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum. For further information, please go to www.rafmuseum.org/podcasts.
Letters home. When people are sent to fight in wars, it's generally far away from home and for long periods of time. In the two world wars, they didn't have telephones or other methods of staying in touch with their families, so they wrote letters and cards. This podcast is devoted to letters and memoirs written around the Christmas period. They remind us of the regimented life of service personnel and the privations of prisoners of war or patients in a military hospital. Aircraft mechanic John Roscoe had been conscripted into the Royal Flying Corps on the 4th of February 1918 at the age of 20 and transferred into the Royal Air Force in April. In December 1918, he was serving with 20 Training Depot Station in Egypt, but was in hospital with dysentery.
Government Hospital, Suez, December 24th, 1918. Dear Mother, you see I'm staying in a dock for Christmas, which is just as well. A tree has been fitted up in the yard and electric lights arranged on it, while every night for the last week I've heard the patients downstairs singing Christmas carols. The music is mostly provided by the gramophone.
Aircraft mechanic Francis Pattenden was serving with 18 Squadron Royal Flying Corps in 1915, spending his first Christmas in France.
18th December 1915. My dear parents and all, many thanks for all three parcels. The electric lamp is splendid. Was glad you sent another battery in the Xmas parcel, as the one in the case was worn out when I received it. I've not opened the cake and pudding parcel yet. I'm saving it for Christmas. Also, contents of other parcel, so that I can enjoy my Christmas, thinking of you all the while I am enjoying my seasonal fare. Don't you worry about me not having a jolly time now. We shall be merry and bright out here, don't you fret. Why, it doesn't do to get down in the dumps out here. We stand the chance of not getting out again if we did. Besides, above all, the RFC should be up in the clouds. Of course we get a bit fed up at times and start moaning a bit, but it's only skin deep. Half an hour afterwards, we're singing at the tops of our voices. I shall be a jolly sight happier this Christmas out here than I was last in Dover, knowing as I did that others were across the water having hardships whilst I was in comfort.
During 1941 and 1942, Cadet John Kelly was based in Scarborough, billeted at the Crown Hotel while serving with No. 10 Initial Training Wing. John Arnold Kelly joined the RAF in October 1941 via one receiving wing in London. He was sent to 10 Initial Training Wing in late October, passing out and being selected for aircrew training in January 1942. In late January, he was posted to 11 Elementary Flying Training School, remaining there until early March 1942.
15th December 1941, Crown Hotel, Scarborough. We have taken up carol singing now, and after lights out, we go in the corridor outside the rooms of a rival flight and sing to them. However, they don't seem to appreciate it very much. It must be the dustbin lids we bang, for the last expedition was received with well-directed jets from several stirrup pumps, which rather dampened our enthusiasm for singing.
Flying Officer Howard Luck was held in Dulag Luft and Stalag Luft III prisoner of war camps between 23rd of November 1942 and the 9th of November 1944. He wrote regular letters to his wife Olga and their daughter Val, and they give an impression of what it was like inside one of these camps. This selection from the letters covers two Christmases spent as a prisoner of war.
30th of December 1942. We had quite a nice time at Christmas. We each had a special food parcel from the Red Cross, which contained a pudding, a cake and a box of chocolate biscuits, so with the addition of our ordinary stuff, we had quite a festive meal. We haven't had all our Christmas parcels yet, but are keeping some for the new year. We had porridge for breakfast, made our lunches sardines, etc., and for tea, we had a cake, homemade from biscuits and breadcrumbs, which was better than the Red Cross ones. We had a slap-up evening meal of steak and onions, tinned, and pudding. We had some beer, which is quite good, though very light, and I decorated the rooms with bits of shrubbery and so on. Our artist was kept very busy and did some wizard drawings. There were choir and carol services, which I'm told were very good, and there is going to be a pantomime soon. Don't forget to tell me what you did and what Val found in her stocking. Love to both, Howard. 28th of December 1944. My dear Olga, so Christmas is over and done with. I hope you all had a good time and plenty of enjoyment. Thanks to the American Red Cross, we had quite a good Christmas dinner with turkey and pudding. On such occasions as this, a Krieg, he finds, is not the man he used to be. You'd be surprised at the number of chaps who are upset by the richness of those delicacies. The Germans were going to let us have some beer, but it did not materialise. And I'm glad to say that owing to our being on half parcels, the SBO's rule against distilling raisin wine was kept. I've not heard from you for some time, but had a letter from Frank on Christmas Eve. What's he doing now? I've had letters from him before, some with different postmarks. I suppose he's not in the local police anymore. I hope he's all right. He said in his letter that he hadn't been doing any serious work for a long time. His previous letters must have gone astray, as I last heard from him in a letter of last February. I hope little Val is getting better. Tell her I think of her every day, and do be sure to look after yourself, dear, and keep warm this weather. Regards to all, and love, Howard.
Sergeant Betty Bristow enlisted in the Women's Auxiliary Air Force in December 1940. Her memoir recalls her first service Christmas whilst undertaking initial training at Harrogate. By December 1942, Sergeant Bristow was serving at RAF Rickall in Yorkshire. She became involved with the station concert party. By December 1943, Sergeant Bristow was serving at RAF Stony Cross. She was recovering from the loss of her boyfriend, who had been killed during a night flying training accident.
December 1940. The next day was Christmas Eve. Breakfast was filling. Porridge, bacon and fried bread, thick doorstops of grey wartime bread, two cogwheel-shaped pats of margarine and a dollop of marmalade. There was plenty of tea, thick and strong. It was made with tinned milk. I was pleased to see there were two tea urns, one sweet and, thankfully, one unsweetened. I don't know how many girls were in my intake. There were tall ones, short ones, fat girls, thin girls, some very young and some of maturer years. We came from all kinds of backgrounds, but there wasn't much talk of our past lives. We were all much too interested in the future. The Christmas Eve dinner tasted rather nasty, so I left most of mine and filled up with buns in the canteen. It was just as well I did. As it was, I spent part of the night trudging to and fro to what we learned to call the ablutions. I was quite lucky. Some of the girls were really ill. I hoped the Christmas dinner would be more acceptable. It was. Different cook, no doubt. We had to take turns with the washing up. The kitchen was a rather horrid place. Great big old wooden sinks, thickly coated with years of grease and soggy tea leaves. It really was disgusting. No wonder we got food poisoning. I was very glad that I was going to be an office runner. We were free on Christmas Day. The weather was mild and sunny. We walked around the town, wrote letters home, and went to a carol service. In the evening there was a dance in the canteen. Mostly we danced with each other. There weren't many men at the Grand Hotel. Some girls wet with homesickness. A few got a bit drunk on warm beer, but most of us were happy and full of excited anticipation for the unknown life that lay ahead.
From 1942, this is an extract from Betty's memory of a Christmas concert party at RAF Rickall in Yorkshire.
It was to be produced by leading aircraftsman Bill Cook and to be called the Rickall Ruffians, with music provided by the small band, the Rickall Rhythm Kings. Very soon, we had a company of singers, instrumentalists, dancers, comedians and a contortionist. She had been on the stage before the war and intended to go back as soon as the war was over. In the meantime, she kept herself supple with rigorous training. We became accustomed to seeing her tied into reef knots in the corner of our hut. I appeared in chorus numbers and danced duets with Midge, the dancing twins. We did two or three shows on the camp and then at the Selby Hippodrome. The Rickall Ruffians were a great success. Well, we all thought we were. The audiences clapped and cheered and laughed in all the right places. There's nothing like topical jokes to bring the house down. It hadn't stopped raining for weeks, and all leave was cancelled.
At Christmas time in 1943, Betty is getting over the loss of her boyfriend.
As Christmas approached, I was beginning to recover my spirits. I was not due for any leave until the new year, so I look forward to the coming Air Force festivities. On Christmas Day, there are old service traditions to be observed. Members of the sergeant's mess are invited to the officer's mess for an annual seasonable drink. We were greeted with a lot of convivial bonhomie and asked what we would like to drink. I asked for a gin and orange. What I got was a tumbler full of weak orange squash. Presumably they had misheard, or the gin had already run out. Either way, I was hardly in a position to complain. That over, we all trooped off to the next old custom, waiting at the table to the other ranks, in the airman's mess. The MO traditionally carved the turkey. Senior officers and warrant officers put it onto the plates. The rest of us carried it all to the tables. As everyone, except me, was fairly merry after the morning drinks, it was all very jolly. I didn't have time to enjoy my own dinner very much because I was due on duty. There was no flying that day, but the ops block had to be manned for routine signals and reports and possible emergencies. It was not as dull as I had anticipated. Most of the ops staff and quite a few squadron personnel wandered in and out in varying degrees of inebriation, bearing food and drink to the Cinderellas who couldn't go to the ball. The night shift drifted in at about 10:30 p.m. and we were released to enjoy what was left of Christmas Day.
Warrant Officer W.G. Hoff was an air gunner and joined the RAF on the 14th of June 1941. He served in Burma with various units, including 357 Squadron, and flew on Liberators, Hudsons, Blenheims and Battles. He was in the RAF until the end of the Second World War, completing two tours.
1254009, Sergeant Hoff, Sergeant's Mess, RAF Delhi, India, 24th December 1942. My darling, Christmas Eve, how can I describe my thoughts? I expect they are pretty similar to your own. All I can say is that I wish I had the opportunity of hitchhiking as I did last year, even if it meant walking all the way. Can you wonder that I do not expect to enjoy this Christmas? Days of hijinks, including a dozen geese, have been prepared in the mess. I'm on duty today and again on Boxing Day, and I wouldn't really have minded doing tomorrow, for at least I would have been alone with my thoughts, and could have got more pleasure in this remembering our past Christmases than in drinking and singing, I expect, a lot of dirty songs. However, at this moment you seem very close to me, and I can almost feel you thinking of me, and I'm more or less content. Who knows? Next year we'll be together again, and we can then enjoy two Christmases in one.
During 1941 and 1942, Cadet John Kelly was based in Scarborough, billeted at the Crown Hotel, while serving with No. 10 Initial Training Wing. John Arnold Kelly joined the RAF in October 1941 via one receiving wing in London. He was sent to 10 Initial Training Wing in late October, passing out and being selected for aircrew training in January 1942. In late January, he was posted to 11 Elementary Flying Training School, remaining there until early March 1942.
15th December 1941, Crown Hotel, Scarborough. We have taken up carol singing now, and after lights out, we go in the corridor outside the rooms of a rival flight and sing to them. However, they don't seem to appreciate it very much. It must be the dustbin lids we bang. For the last expedition was received with well-directed jets from several stirrup pumps, which rather dampened our enthusiasm for singing.
Flying Officer Howard Luck was held in Dulag Luft and Stalag Luft III prisoner of war camps between 23rd of November 1942 and the 9th of November 1944. He wrote regular letters to his wife Olga and their daughter Val, and they give an impression of what it was like inside one of these camps. This selection from the letters covers two Christmases spent as a prisoner of war.
30th of December 1942. We had quite a nice time at Christmas. We each had a special food parcel from the Red Cross, which contained a pudding, a cake and a box of chocolate biscuits, so with the addition of our ordinary stuff we had quite a festive meal. We haven't had all our Christmas parcels yet, but are keeping some for the new year. We had porridge for breakfast, made our lunches sardines, etc., and for tea we had a cake, homemade from biscuits and breadcrumbs, which was better than the Red Cross ones. We had a slap-up evening meal of steak and onions, tinned, and pudding. We had some beer, which is quite good, though very light, and I decorated the rooms with bits of shrubbery and so on. Our artist was kept very busy and did some wizard drawings. There were choir and carol services, which I'm told were very good, and there is going to be a pantomime soon. Don't forget to tell me what you did and what Val found in her stocking. Love to both. Howard. 28th of December 1944. My dear Olga, so Christmas is over and done with. I hope you all had a good time and plenty of enjoyment. Thanks to the American Red Cross, we had quite a good Christmas dinner with turkey and pudding. On such occasions as this, a Kriegi finds he is not the man he used to be. You'd be surprised at the number of chaps who are upset by the richness of those delicacies. The Germans were going to let us have some beer, but it did not materialise. and I'm glad to say that owing to our being on half parcels, the SBO's rule against distilling raisin wine was kept. I've not heard from you for some time, but had a letter from Frank on Christmas Eve. What's he doing now? I've had letters from him before, with some with different postmarks. I suppose he's not in the local police anymore. I hope he's all right. He said in his letter that he hadn't been doing any serious work for a long time. His previous letters must have gone astray, as I last heard from him in a letter of last February. I hope little Val is getting better. Tell her I think of her every day, and do be sure to look after yourself, dear, and keep warm this weather. Regards to all, and love, Howard.
Sergeant Betty Bristow enlisted in the Women's Auxiliary Air Force in December 1940. Her memoir recalls her first service Christmas whilst undertaking initial training at Harrogate. By December 1942, Sergeant Bristow was serving at RAF Rickall in Yorkshire. She became involved with the station concert party. By December 1943, Sergeant Bristow was serving at RAF Stony Cross. She was recovering from the loss of her boyfriend, who had been killed during a night flying training accident.
December 1940. The next day was Christmas Eve. Breakfast was filling. Porridge, bacon and fried bread, thick doorstops of grey wartime bread, two cogwheel-shaped pats of margarine and a dollop of marmalade. There was plenty of tea, thick and strong. It was made with tinned milk. I was pleased to see there were two tea urns, one sweet and, thankfully, one unsweetened. I don't know how many girls were in my intake. There were tall ones, short ones, fat girls, thin girls, some very young and some of maturer years. We came from all kinds of backgrounds, but there wasn't much talk of our past lives. We were all much too interested in the future. The Christmas Eve dinner tasted rather nasty, so I left most of mine and filled up with buns in the canteen. It was just as well I did. As it was, I spent part of the night trudging to and fro to what we learned to call the ablutions. I was quite lucky. Some of the girls were really ill. I hoped the Christmas dinner would be more acceptable. It was. Different cook, no doubt. We had to take turns with the washing up. The kitchen was a rather horrid place. Great big old wooden sinks, thickly coated with years of grease and soggy tea leaves. It really was disgusting. No wonder we got food poisoning. I was very glad that I was going to be an office runner. We were free on Christmas Day. The weather was mild and sunny. We walked around the town, wrote letters home, and went to a carol service. In the evening there was a dance in the canteen. Mostly we danced with each other. There weren't many men at the Grand Hotel. Some girls wept with homesickness. A few got a bit drunk on warm beer, but most of us were happy and full of excited anticipation for the unknown life that lay ahead.
From 1942, this is an extract from Betty's memory of a Christmas concert party at RAF Rickall in Yorkshire.
It was to be produced by leading aircraftsman Bill Cook and to be called the Rickall Ruffians, with music provided by the small band, the Rickall Rhythm Kings. Very soon, we had a company of singers, instrumentalists, dancers, comedians and a contortionist. She had been on the stage before the war and intended to go back as soon as the war was over. In the meantime, she kept herself supple with rigorous training. We became accustomed to seeing her tied into reef knots in the corner of our hut. I appeared in chorus numbers and danced duets with Midge, the dancing twins. We did two or three shows on the camp and then at the Selby Hippodrome. The Rickall Ruffians were a great success. Well, we all thought we were. The audiences clapped and cheered and laughed in all the right places. There's nothing like topical jokes to bring the house down. It hadn't stopped raining for weeks, and all leave was cancelled.
At Christmas time in 1943, Betty is getting over the loss of her boyfriend.
As Christmas approached, I was beginning to recover my spirits. I was not due for any leave until the new year, so I look forward to the coming Air Force festivities. On Christmas Day, there are old service traditions to be observed. Members of the sergeant's mess are invited to the officer's mess for an annual seasonable drink. We were greeted with a lot of convivial bonhomie and asked what we would like to drink. I asked for a gin and orange. What I got was a tumbler full of weak orange squash. Presumably they had misheard, or the gin had already run out. Either way, I was hardly in a position to complain. That over, we all trooped off to the next old custom, waiting at the table to the other ranks, in the airman's mess. The MO traditionally carved the turkey. Senior officers and warrant officers put it onto the plates. The rest of us carried it all to the tables. As everyone, except me, was fairly merry after the morning drinks, it was all very jolly. I didn't have time to enjoy my own dinner very much because I was due on duty. There was no flying that day, but the ops block had to be manned for routine signals and reports and possible emergencies. It was not as dull as I had anticipated. Most of the ops staff and quite a few squadron personnel wandered in and out in varying degrees of inebriation, bearing food and drink to the Cinderellas who couldn't go to the ball. The night shift drifted in at about 10:30 p.m. and we were released to enjoy what was left of Christmas Day.
Warrant Officer W.G. Hoff was an air gunner and joined the RAF on the 14th of June 1941. He served in Burma with various units, including 357 Squadron, and flew on Liberators, Hudsons, Blenheims and Battles. He was in the RAF until the end of the Second World War, completing two tours.
1254009, Sergeant Hoff, Sergeant's Mess, RAF Delhi, India, 24th December 1942. My darling, Christmas Eve, how can I describe my thoughts? I expect they are pretty similar to your own. All I can say is that I wish I had the opportunity of hitchhiking as I did last year, even if it meant walking all the way. Can you wonder that I do not expect to enjoy this Christmas? Days of hijinks, including a dozen geese, have been prepared in the mess. I'm on duty today and again on Boxing Day, and I wouldn't really have minded doing tomorrow, for at least I would have been alone with my thoughts, and could have got more pleasure in this remembering our past Christmases than in drinking and singing, I expect, a lot of dirty songs. However, at this moment you seem very close to me, and I can almost feel you thinking of me, and I'm more or less content. Who knows, next year we'll be together again, and we can then enjoy two Christmases in one.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum.